Busy routines can make it hard to focus on your health goals, but MedExpress offers a simple way to explore weight management treatment online. Complete our short eligibility consultation with no need for face-to-face appointments or travel. If eligible, treatment is delivered discreetly, with UK-registered clinicians offering support along the way. Visit medexpress.co.uk/podcast to get started today.
Have you ever spent your entire life trying to prove you're enough? Enough to be loved, enough to be chosen, enough to belong. What if the reason you're working so hard, people pleasing, overachieving, or carrying pain from decades ago has nothing to do with who you are today and everything to do with a wound that was created long before you had words for it? Today's guest shares a story that will change the way you think about identity, abandonment, trauma, and healing. Two siblings, the same father, separate lives, one DNA test, and a lesson every single one of us needs to hear. Welcome back to the show. Today, we're talking about something that affects almost everybody listening, whether they realize it or not, the need to belong. Because when we don't feel like we belong, we compensate. Some people become workaholics. Some people caretakers. Some become perfectionists. Some spend years trying to earn love they should have received freely. My guest today took two very different paths. So James Hayden grew up feeling like an outsider. He didn't know his biological family. He was told he wasn't truly blood and spent decades becoming one of the most driven people in every room he entered. Donnie Ray Shaw grew up with abandonment, instability, multiple stepfathers, abuse, trauma, and a father who disappeared when she was 9 years old. So one learned to survive through achievement. The other learned to survive through resilience. Neither knew they shared the same father. Neither knew they were carrying different versions of the same wound until one DNA test connected them and changed both of their lives forever. And so today we're going beyond the story. We're talking about how childhood wounds shape adulthood, why belonging matters so much, and what healing actually looks like. So thank you both for being here. It's such an honor, and this is such an amazing story. I'm so excited to dive deeper into it.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, James, I'd love to start with you. If I had met you 20 years ago and asked you what drove you, what would you have said?
20 years ago, it would be fear of being homeless, my family being on the street, even though I had a good income and good jobs, you know, fear of clients not liking me and that. So it was really around acceptance. And I had a fear of being abandoned, like in businesses. I left one company that I had a pretty significant interest in, 1% of the company. And I left the company before they sold 2 years later for $250 million. And because I was afraid I'd be, you know, discovered, even though I had a major hand in getting them where they were. So, and I had the same issues with my daughters and wife. You know, I always had a fear that people would leave me. And it, for me, it manifested itself in workaholism. What I would do, I'd do to excess, not drinking drugs or anything like that. But it was, you know, if I got into mountain climbing, let's go after the seven summits. There was never enough. And I was looking for acceptance. People I worked with called me a chameleon in the workplace because, you know, part of that was adapting to every circumstance, but really becoming a people pleaser. Sigmund, my wife, you know, would call me out and say, you know, you're like, this isn't who you are or what you believe in. Why are you doing this? To get the sale, to get acceptance, and really to heal that primal wound I had from being adopted. And so, yeah, I just, from the time I can remember, really the motivation I had was in college. I went into a classroom and I'd kind of like stereotype, but I'd look for people who would be my biggest competition. And then I'd look for them in the library. I went to a smaller university and I'd make sure I worked harder than they did. obsessed with the work ethic.
So Donnie, let me ask you the same question. When you look back at your younger self, what was the deepest wound that you were carrying? Was it the abandonment, rejection, feeling unsafe, or was it something else?
I think, it depends on what stage and what area in the world we lived and what father they had. And I mean, there's so much to say. I guess what affected me or to answer that question would be, I'm going to go with like right when I was around, you know, 5, 6 years old. And there just was so much chaos and so much instability and so many adults in and out. And there was just no real attention to children. And at that point, it was my older sister and I. She had another dad, my mom's first husband, when she was 17, my mom. And then I, you know, my dad had the sons that were from one of his wives. They were in Idaho. This is all in Idaho. And then my grandparents were there. So in the instability, there was the stability of like, oh, there's my siblings. And my grandparents were the ones that we'd spend the most time with. And I just loved that so much. And so at about right when I was almost turning 7, I was 6 years old, my mom takes off with another man, leaves now her third husband. And his name was Mac, and I loved him. I really, really loved Mac. He was really, really cool. And I was able to see my dad a little bit. He was really in and out. And anyway, so there was this moment of my mom taking us and moving us out of Idaho with this, come to find out, just crazy schizophrenic man. And I think that was a pivotal place where I just learned to disassociate, to learn how to survive, and broke my heart. Yeah, it broke my heart to take us out of Idaho like that. And then I just set a goal that I would get back there as much as I can. And then that's a whole nother story. But I think that's like a huge pivotal piece. There was just so much instability and crazy stuff going on.
I mean, I think a lot of people can relate to that instability and so much chaos going on when we're younger. What were the stories that both of you were carrying about yourselves?
I mean, the stories I carried about myself were, I was always different. You know, I didn't have any friends who were adopted. And even though my parents were very open and I knew from the beginning that I was adopted, it was always different. And, you know, everybody could point to, you know, here's my mom and dad, whether mom and dad are together or not. They knew who their mom and dad were. They knew their brothers and sisters. So I didn't know or see anybody like me. I'd walk down the street and I'd see people that, well, I mean, that person could be my mom or that person could be my sister. So I always wondered, there was that missing puzzle piece. And the, you know, what I found out later was my birth mom attempted to abort me. Here I am, but it didn't work, thank goodness. And then the other part was when I was 7, my mom that raised me, her mother, we were sitting at dinner, just us. I was raised as an only child. And so there were 4 of us at dinner, and she just all of a sudden turned to me and looked me in the eye and said, you know, you'll never amount to as much as your cousins because you're not blood. So my mom worked, you know, she was very upset about that, about what she said. But yeah, it was always that I always knew that I was different and I didn't have any siblings to, you know, relate to. So I had these parents who were 40 and 45 years older than me. And, you know, we'd travel, we'd go different places. I could relate to old people, but younger people or people my age, you know, you're going through stuff, and everything I saw in my life, I thought was different than everybody else. And right. So it was, I never felt I belonged, even though I had parents who were, you know, loving and nice people. There was always something there that was different, and it manifested itself in, you know, when I got older and I started, you know, partying a bit too much in high school. And yeah, it definitely had an impact on my behavior and the insecurities I grew up with that turned out to be some of them positive, but I wasted a lot of time on, I shouldn't say wasted a lot of time. You know, one of the big things I've learned from Donnie, and I think we've learned a lot from each other, is to embrace our past. And Donnie's been amazing at doing that. And I love the story of my birth father and siblings and birth mother more than ever. And it's, even though, you know, it seems like opening a Pandora's box when you meet all these new half siblings and that, it's been I almost said something you'd probably bleep me out for, but it's been an amazing story and an incredible story. And I feel more peace in my life now knowing than I've ever felt before. It's incredible. You know, Donnie's a real inspiration to me, what she's what she's done and what she brings to the world, and has had an impact on the way I see the world.
Absolutely. And I mean, Donnie, you've been through so much. Your story is so deep. I mean, your father disappeared when you were 9. You lived through the instability, abuse, constant change and moving, and years of trauma. And when you're a child and adults repeatedly leave or hurt you, what do you start believing about yourself? Did you feel invisible, or did you feel like you had to earn your place in the world? What was that like for you? How did that show up in your relationships and friendships, career, all of the things?
Well, so yes to all that. I think that I took on the in my personality innately without all the, you know, extra unfortunate things going on, because we start to form how we're going to survive and how we're going to protect ourselves. And so I, like I said, I learned right away to disassociate. And I also took on that, you know, I'm just going to be so good. I'm just going to be a good girl. And my sister and my mom, my mom was really, really, really hard on my older sister. And that comes from just a lot of story there from my mom. But I then became the, like, okay, I'm going to keep the boat from rocking, and I'm going to keep everybody happy, because really what was going on is it scared me. And so as life went on and on and on longer, and we got older, that got even worse. My sister was very rebellious. And anyway, so I internalized a lot of things to not rock the boat. And my goal was to win my dad over. I mean, he just, in my mind, I was in such a fantasy, because his vibrancy, his charisma, he's so good looking, really athletic. Everything he did in terms of that, like being an outdoorsman, he was 100% like successful. You just wanted to be around him. And unfortunately, there'd be the flip side too of that, where he was very unstable and very disappearing and abandoning, you know. And anyway, and so, yeah, I created a story in my mind and my heart that I just, you know, even as I grew older, you know, that I just had such a great childhood, and I would think that I was so happy, and I was, you know, and I would just find happy, and I would create it myself. But it was like Disneyland was inside me, and that's how I would survive. And I also, thank God, a grandma, you know, taught me about the Lord, and she taught me the Lord's Prayer, and that became a mantra. And it became a mantra, and I created and memorized a prayer, which God blessed everybody in the family. So that lasted about 20 minutes. And then I would just pray, and I would get on my knees. And that was like this sacred secret, I thought, because I always felt like I didn't want anybody to see me doing that. But it launched the protection of God in me, which is what pulled me through. I mean, I'm lucky to even be here, be alive, you know, all the things that could have gone away. But yeah. And so I've worked a long time. It was shocking when I realized, oh my God, my childhood was messed up. You know, and I had really had this, like, I was so happy, but that's where I just landed to survive.
Yeah. I mean, you could have become bitter, but instead you became someone dedicated to healing. For someone listening today who feels stuck in trauma, what do you want them to hear? Like, what changed for you? How did you, I don't know, get to this space? What was the first step?
Well, so I love that you just said about the bitterness, because it was definitely in there, and it turned it against myself. So I learned how to abandon me. I learned how to abuse me. And so I just was so, like, I think probably you would title it, you know, obsessive compulsive, and keeping everything in order, you know, in order for me to feel safe. But I became really obsessed about, I was so hard on myself. I was just so, I'd beat myself all the time, which in time led to, you know, it led, well, you know, the sexual abuse started when I was, you know, about 12 years old. And so then again, it was more confirmation on this level of, you know, negativity, in that, and that I'm learning more to that, how to abuse myself, which led to an eating disorder, and which led to many other things that I did in the way of abusing me. And I just kept the story going inside, so that I had this fantasy of being happy. That was to survive what was really going on inside that was eating me alive, literally. And so the diabetes or the eating disorder led to diabetes, and it was really hard on my body. And it was my eating disorder that led me into treatment finally. And so many things in between all this, but I just had this pursuit of being the best I could be. And in the midst of it, really hard on myself, but it led me to find the right the people. It led me to find different treatments. I just was on a pursuit. At first I thought, well, I have to do big adventurous things. Like what Jim was saying, I took myself right out of high school and I got on a boat in Alaska, and I would just do things really adventurous to get out there in the world. Cause I thought if I do enough big badass stuff, then I'll overcome what's on me, what's chasing me. And what ended up happening is that things rolled into getting a lot worse with my eating disorder. And it was so contradictive to me and being an athlete and being health conscious and all this, right? And even so much, you know, I was athlete and cheerleader and pep club and high school, and I loved it. But in the background, there's so much abuse going on, so much instability and so forth. But yeah, so I had a determination inside that I'm gonna get this. I'm gonna overcome this. I just knew it, and I really think that plant of God in me, and that I can say now, because I'm so far back from it all in my healing journey, that it just led me to this platform of what I do right now. And that was the intention. That was the residual beautiful, you know, how can you say that all in one sentence? But payback for me is that it was going to turn and flip, and that's what's happened in my life.
Yeah. Most people go through trauma, spend tons of time running from it and you know, thinking that they're doing all the things, but really it's when you take a step back and sit in the quiet and you have to process that. But all of these experiences are introducing you to different experiences and different people. And God is such a big player in all of this. James, for you, what was your turning point? When did you begin questioning the idea that your worth was tied to your accomplishments? And what would you tell other high achievers who are exhausted from carrying the weight of trying to prove themselves?
It's really the more you know about yourself and that examination. All of us go through some kind of trauma. You know, they're just varying degrees of what it is. I really have a sense now that if you can find a way to, like I said earlier, embrace that all of our lives are imperfect. I used to believe that there had to be perfect, you know, families were perfect. And I created that same kind of fantasy, except knowing that I wasn't in a perfect family and my background wasn't perfect. So I was always striving for that perfection. And I really believe we need, or I don't believe, I know we need to embrace imperfections and accept that. And the other thing is the vulnerability too. You know, I felt like I had to have a perfect story. And you know, when I first went in the workplace of my career, I wanted my hair to look like Gordon Gekko from Wall Street and all of that. And I have, you know, I have relatively curly hair. It doesn't look like it this morning. But the turning points for me were, it sounds like I'm crazy, but the voices in my head, and some of that came from the mom that raised me, that she told me, whether it was fabricated or not, that a fortune teller told her when I was 2 years old that I'd be a great person. She told me that every time I got in trouble. And I was, you know, I did things like I was the chairperson for our senior cruise. We went to Canada where the drinking age was 19. And so all of us got served up in Victoria. And I was chairperson of this, and I was thrown in jail on the ship because there was another group who were throwing deck chairs overboard and that kind of thing. I got in quite a bit of trouble from, you know, the school and the PTA, almost didn't graduate. And my mom came back to me and she said, you know what? She said, a fortune teller told me you're going to be a great person someday. And this is just a road bump. So I had that kind of stopping me. Like there were some decisions I made going into school and that my life would have gone definitely a different direction. And I went to a university at the last minute where there was a group I went to in high school called Young Life. There was a religious or a Christian affiliation to it. And I went there because the nicest, best looking girls went there. It was kind of a, you know, target rich environment, if you will. And so I ended up going to school where I knew I'd have the best influences. So that had an impact on me. And the other insecurities I had around being good enough or, you know, especially the people pleasing part, I've carried it with me my entire life up until recently. So the interesting part about like meeting Donnie and the rest of my siblings and knowing that story is rather than going, oh shit, you know, it's not a perfect family. It's like I celebrated it. You know, the discussions I've had with friends I've known 30 or 40 years, when I tell the story, it's like they're amazed. And then they open up and tell me other things about their lives. And then the companies that I'm advising still, I really encourage the CEOs I work with to open up and be vulnerable about their past, because all of us have had some messed up stuff in our past. And embracing that and being vulnerable is so important. I think it's just laying it out there rather than going, you know, I had these parents and I went to school, I did all these things, I've had all these accomplishments, like I talk about, you know, the revenue I've generated for companies. But, you know, I was hurting inside during that. And that some of that insecurity, that drive, I wasted a lot of time in one way, if you look at it that way, dealing with that to prove I was good enough to myself, really, but the rest of the world, did like, I'm going to show you what I can do. And I don't regret that because it's led me to where I am. Like I said, the puzzle piece that came together for me was meeting Donnie and the siblings and knowing that story. All of a sudden, it's like things made sense. I mean, we talked about the hectic, crazy part of the story, but I love it and embrace it. It's who I am. So that self-acceptance and the incredible product that's come out of this for me is the insights I'm getting about people, insights I'm getting about business are things I didn't have before. You know, it's recognizing patterns, integrating those, and then developing my own patterns or ideas. And I Donnie may have seen a couple of the things I've done around that, because part of my brain was always there going like, who am I? You know, if you look at your brain like a computer, it's like, who am I? It's always processing that. It's gone. So my God-given brain can start to process other things. I feel I'm like at the prime or peak of my life in so many ways. So many different pieces have come together because of that. So anyway, that was maybe a long-winded answer for you, but that's, I had several turning points, and I have a very patient family with me who's dealt with my insecurities and, you know, my need to get ahead and wanting what's best for them. So that's a bit of my story. And I, you know, thank God that my wife and daughters have been so patient with me too over the years, because I certainly haven't been an easy person to live with because of the insecurities and drive that I had, you know, vacations when I was on the phone most of the time because I felt I needed to be.
Right. Well, I want to talk more about the DNA test. I know you talked about this in the previous episode, and to our audience, please go back and listen to the last episode where we dive more into detail about this. But I think people are going to hear this part and think it's a miracle. I don't think the DNA test was a miracle. I think what happened afterwards is. So to remind the audience of how you guys discovered each other, who reached out first? What was the first conversation like? James, you said there was a moment when information became family. So tell us about that.
Yeah, I guess I went from being perceived as a stalker by Donnie to like, maybe I'm really related to this person. And so it was, you know, for me, it was quite an experience. We were traveling, and one of my daughters was really tracking on Ancestry.com, tracking the progress of this, and we were in a different time zone. My phone blew up when I got up in the morning because of the discovery. And I'd reached out to Donnie and kind of got through Facebook Messenger and got a couple of responses back, like, okay. And then Donnie went off to a retreat that she was involved in. Her retreats are so good. I'd have to say that any of you should check out her retreats on her website at DonnieRay.com. Anyway, just putting that plug in because they're amazing. So she came back from the retreat and started looking at my Facebook profile and went, holy crap, this guy looks like a brother, you know,
right,
or a relative. He looks like us. And so that information started, you know, clicking in terms of family. And then we started putting the other pieces about all the other siblings we have and the discoveries around like our family in terms of health issues. You know, we all have, there's autoimmune clusters in our DNA. We have, most of us have, or are certainly susceptible to autoimmune deficiencies that kind of across that, that family. But, you know, the other amazing thing is I see some characteristics and energy that Donnie and I share in common. And it's just like your whole life, you've wondered who your people were, your tribe, you know, that you're really related to, and discover other people and to see some things in common is mind blowing.
Absolutely. Donnie, when did your heart recognize James as your brother? You thought he was a stalker at first, but when was that moment where it clicked for you? Like, you're like, oh my gosh, this is real.
Well, so yeah, unfortunately for him, there was, you know, I just have, have some experience with, you know, people reaching out that are, you know, it's ridiculous or whatever. And at the time that I started seeing his messages come through on Messenger on Facebook, I was a little preoccupied with just my work and, you know, and I'm like, oh, you know, and I didn't really look close. And it was also kind of vague in my opinion, that could have been more me. And I was just like, and then once I got settled and I was over ready for my retreat, I really dove in to look at some things that he was saying, and he began to say a little bit more in detail of actual, like, true things about our dad. Historically, where he was, you know, just in the military and just things like that. And then I went on and I went in to look at his profile and I started sifting through pictures. Well, he put on baby pictures. Yeah, which was it sealed the deal. I knew that we needed to talk because of some of the things he was sharing. I also have had people from Ancestry DNA reach out to me for health reasons because there's some lineage or that actually, like, we have a lot of siblings. And there was a sibling that I never got to meet. Of course, Jim, neither. And anyway, she passed away when she was 40. She had two kids. Her children reached out to me. And so that brought this person and that story a little more into our lives, and that they live in Idaho and they've met some of the family now too. Anyway. And so I knew that this, okay. And the fact that it was, he said Ancestry DNA. And so anyway, and so I looked at these pictures and he just looks like a little towhead, like everybody else that in our family related to my dad, and especially the boys. And so we reached out and we set a date, and I found out that, you know, I'm involved in a yoga studio in Seattle, and it's right in the same area that Jim lives. And so, yeah, it was in July after my retreat, we connected after I was teaching, and that we could have talked for all night. And we talked for like 3 hours, and that began this journey. You know, it's really amazing. And we're both so, in our own ways, in our stories, we're both so hungry for that connected, you know, constant relationship, which I don't know what that's like. And I have 11 other siblings, and there's just so much going on that we didn't learn how to do that, unless you're part of a larger pod from our dad, right? And so a lot of the siblings in Idaho, they've been able to remain with a big connection, a big family kind of feeling. But there's some of us that we're just not part of that. We're drawn out of it, and it's hard to do that, you know. And so I've got this big brother now that lives in my neighborhood, if you will.
Yeah, Wow, what an incredible story. And I can't believe you guys were living so close to each other. Like, what are the odds of that? It's so interesting. I think the audience wants to know what changed for both of you after finding each other. So, James, what questions? You spent all these years like digging for answers. It was like you were looking for something that was missing. So what got answered for you, and what happened to that feeling of something being missing?
It really started when I was younger in Alaska, living up here. And I didn't want a little brother, but I wanted a little, and my mom told me to pray.
So you manifested her. Is that what you're saying?
To pray for a little sister. Because I thought that would be cool to have a little sister, little brothers. I mean, I had friends and we beat the crap out of each other and do what guys do. And it's like, I don't want that kind of competition. I want, you know, like a sweet little sister. We can have this, you know, great friendship and that. And so, yeah, it took 60 some years to manifest it, but here we are. So it was that. I mean, the mind blowing thing for me is I worked at Microsoft for a period of time, and Donnie worked for a health and a fitness club that was pretty well tied to Microsoft. And I went to quite a few classes there. And then her yoga studio here, one of her yoga studios, is half a mile from my home. So we probably walked by each other, seen each other. And, you know, here we're related by blood. It was amazing. So, I mean, other ways, it's just even today, for me, it's kind of reconstructing our past and our history together. Like when we get together, sometimes it's just like, what about this? What about that? What about this? What about that? And we're still going through that, you know, connective web, if you will, of what our histories are. And I'm kind of at the point, like, screw other people. We're going to talk about this because we have stuff, we have 60 years of stuff to catch up on. And so it's great to discover this. Like I said, I have a new energy or renewal for my life. Things just keep happening and keep getting better. And I attribute a lot of that as to just opening up that part of my life, that puzzle piece coming together. And it's just, it's cool to have a sister like Donnie. And it's cool to have brothers and sisters like the rest of them that, you know, are not on this, this podcast today. It's a really good group of people, and they're leading different lives than our birth father has. And they're good people. So the people we're related to, I'm proud to be part of that tribe. And, it's at 70 years old, I discovered that. And, I would encourage people who, if there are things unknown about your life, it may be scary. Maybe it's an analogy like jumping out of an airplane, but with a parachute, to find out. You owe it to yourself, and you'll learn something, but you'll become more self-actualized. You'll become a person that doesn't have those questions, and you can really focus on living your best life.
Yeah. And Donnie, you said that James, you feel so close to him, like so close to him. So why is that? And what does belonging now actually feel like?
Well, honestly, full transparency, I like my number, if this was in the love languages, which I feel like it should be, but my top thing that is my deal, my jam that just blows my skirt up is connection. Mm-hmm. Like really. Like it's everything to me. And I'm sure that it's the byproduct of, you know, where I come from, but it means so much to me. And so I've grieved, and I still do, you know, not having that relational connection with other siblings. And I feel really left out, and it just is what it is. And when I was younger, I was determined that every time my dad would be dropping children on this earth, I'm like, okay, I'm going to be the big sister. And that was my goal. And especially with one of my siblings at one point of our lives, and she's in Idaho. And over time in life and whatever, you know, it's been quite a journey and scarring, and it is what it is. And if we're in the same room together, like it's okay. And we've talked about it, but it isn't, I don't have what some of them have together at all. And And even my three brothers before me, they don't have that deep connection. They've got kids and they've got grandkids now, and that's awesome. But they have all their own stories. None of us remained really, really close. And we have another brother who is just the salt of the earth, and that's Michael. And I've been closest to him and his wife, my sister-in-law, and their kids, and I got to really help raise them. So I felt more family with them. But it's never been what I, I missed, but that yearning that you feel to just be connected. And when I see it in other families, or I see it in some of the ways that some of our family have as siblings together, it's just a deep, deep grief. So that's the longing, the yearning. So with Jim, the Martian, coming and all of a sudden landing in my life, it's really hard to put words to. There's this instant bond that I still have to pinch myself. And I think we'll relate, because it's like, is this real? Is he for real? Is he a fraud? You know, and it's like that stuff comes up, you know, and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, but here's some pretty big facts, you know. Yeah. And I've had, you know, a lot of experience with deception. And really, really close to me, just the deception. And so I have to just walk myself through that and we're still working on trusting what's right in front of me with all the proof and the pudding, right? And then what I'm left with always is this feeling of, from seeing the solid family, the marriage that he has, this beautiful wife who's my sister-in-law now, you know, and all those words just, it's just like, oh my gosh, those are coming out of my mouth. And the other day she texts me and she called me sis. And I was like, oh my God, you know, and literally like right now, yeah. I could cry. And just they've just opened their lives up to us and me and my daughter and our lives. And literally like everything I do, they either have tried it, done it, so are still doing it, you know, or are just edifying me so much. And I could go on and on. And so, I feel this deep connection and so excited to have more of it. And I love, you know, their interest in everything in my life. And it's continual. And I see that that's how they operate in their lives fully. I love that they're vibrant and healthy at their age, right? We all are. I'm in my 60s and they're 60s and 71, Jim. And it's like, okay, man, we get this lap around the mountain and we're going to make it last long and deep. And yeah, it's exciting. So I feel safer in the world because of Jim and yeah. And so like, he's just the biggest cheerleader. And
yeah, what an amazing story. I know, Donnie, that you have to jump off right away because you're going to teach one of your classes. It is such a beautiful story. And I can hear the emotion in your voice. I think before you go, and then we'll finish up with James, what do you feel like the real lesson was underneath this whole story? And do you feel like someone can heal without finding a sibling or without all the answers?
Well, so yes, that's like, you know, if there's this, you know, unbelievable, you know, juicy story of someone, it's your mom, your dad, anybody in our lives that pass away and they're never got to be processing or closure live, I believe very much that that can happen for us in what I call really deep dive therapy healing. All of that lives inside of us, and it it's like anything, like you are not responsible for how I feel or how I operate, no matter what you do towards me or any of that, right? Like, we have the ability, we have access to so much to rewrite this. And honestly, most people won't dive deep enough to connect with the inner child, their inner child, to let those parts of their bodies, their spirit, have integration. And yeah, it's ever until we're gone, it's this journey to work towards wholeness, you know, and that'll be forever. But, you know, details are important and they're a blessing if they come. But that healing can still happen with the determination and the willingness to go and really be truthful with ourselves and to feel it all and to make amends to ourselves and like it's so important. Like, this may have happened to me, but then there's a part of me that abandoned me and I didn't take care of myself. I didn't protect myself. And just working through the shame and the guilt, and to that integration brings a completeness. Yeah. Where we don't have to have that other person, but what a blessing it is to get more information, like what's happened for Jim and our whole family here, for more identity, for more just like, oh, okay, here's this man, our father, and here's more to his story, you know, and to do enough of our own work so that we're not living in a state of resentment. We're not living in a state of victimized, you know, that we become not just survivors of this stuff, but conquerors, you know. And yeah, so I know that doesn't seem possible for a lot of people, and it seems far-fetched. And I'll tell you something, that it took me, I just had a huge solo retreat where I had the deepest integration happen, and I've been at this a long time. But what kept me from allowing a lot of my healing was that I felt like if I really feel how much I love my dad, if I really feel what it was like to lose him constantly. And then all of a sudden, when he left for a decade, and that's when I was 9. If I feel that, if I feel what it was really like to be abandoned and abused by these adults in my life who weren't keeping me safe, I won't survive what it feels like. I can't, how can I feel all that at once? I literally thought that I would implode. And so we have to look at, you know, why are we not going towards that? Why are we continuing behaviors that help us to you know, use maladaptive, you know, whatever it might be, addictions to keep me away from feeling? And so I was determined to press into it. And the deepest of my integration happened this April. And I'm 65. Mm-hmm. I've been doing this a long time. And so yes to what you said. And it's just the determination, and we will attract the right path, the right door, the right therapist, the right tribe of people to support that and experiences. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for showing up today and being so open and vulnerable. And I know in future episodes, we're going to go deeper into your story. There's so many different things that you can inspire our audience with. So I'd love to have you back on and sharing more of who you are and everything you've been through. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. All right. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
James, I want to hear your side. So do you think that someone can heal without finding their story, their sibling? What was the lesson that you learned underneath this story?
I believe it's possible to heal in an instant. Yeah, you can heal. You can go to the doctor and you can get a prescription that will heal what you have. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You won't be whole though. So, I mean, if you look at it like a medical practice, you know, there's looking at a holistic approach as opposed to I took the pain away, right? And you can do that. What Donnie mentioned, you know, at 65 is a breakthrough she's having. What I mentioned at 70, finding a whole new piece of my life that didn't exist before. I felt like my life was fine. I didn't feel like I wasn't healed. I'd resolved the insecurity I had about, you know, not entirely about people pleasing, but a lot of the other insecurities I'd resolved over time.
Mm-hmm.
However, I wouldn't have the freedom I have today from all those things that have been circling around in my head for years and years and years. So it sounds like a non-answer, but it's really, yes, it's possible to heal,
mm-hmm.
not possible to be complete.
Right. Absolutely. So for anyone out there listening, what is one thing you wish every adult struggling today could hear?
You have trauma. All of us have had some kind of trauma and traumas we deal with. I was fortunate to be able to have those traumas give me fuel that fueled career success, certainly. But don't let your traumas and what's happened to you in the past dictate who you are. And what I talk about in business is, it sounds kind of harsh, but adapt or die, right? And I think we constantly have to be looking at how we can enhance our lives, how we can be better people. And some of that's getting in touch with those things like the vulnerability we talked about. So don't let your past define who you are. And I'd say stand in vulnerability and love. You know, be a person that loves other people and love without judgment. And there's a great deal of satisfaction out of sometimes when things seem their darkest, doing something for somebody else can be such a boost. St. Francis, one of the things St. Francis said was, it's in the giving that we truly receive. And there's a lot of that. And there's actually scientific evidence that shows when you do something for somebody else, it boosts your, I think, some of the chemicals in your body. You actually feel better than you and feel better. Yes, it's selfless, but it's also somewhat selfish. And so there's a reason for that. So be of service to other people. But being of service means the more in touch you are with who you are, the more actualized you are, the more whole you are as a person. Like, I'm still evolving through this, the happier your life's going to be. And, you know, I've had friends who've been terribly abused, and Donnie talks about the abuse she went through. You meet her and I think you've got a sense of who she is, such an inspiring person. And she worked through that. You know, I could let my primal wound for being adopted rule my life. I didn't. And we have those traumas. Learn to find a way to channel that and let them go.
Remind us how many siblings that you found through the DNA test.
Yeah, I had four others on my birth mom's side. And there's 11, actually I'd be 12 on my birth father's side. So there's actually 16 that I have in total. Yeah. And
that's
it doesn't
incredible.
Mean we're close to everyone. I mean, Donnie and I, you know, we're in the same area. We have a lot in common and we hang out. We pretty much talk every day. It's pretty cool. I didn't think I had any in my life, but yeah, I would. She's definitely part of that family circle for us.
Amazing. What an amazing story. Thank you so much for showing up today and for sharing parts of it. I know we're going to dig into more of it in future episodes, which I'm super excited for. Who knew, right? Who knew what some ancestry.com digging deep can do for you in your life? So thank you so much. Do you have any last minute things you'd like to share with the audience?
I feel really complete right now.
Good. Good. It was amazing. Thank you so much. So thank you to our audience for also tuning in. Today's conversation wasn't really about DNA. It was about something so much bigger, the human need to belong, the reality that childhood wounds often follow us into adulthood, and the hope that healing is possible no matter how much pain you've carried. So James and Donnie's story reminds us that our past may explain us, but it doesn't have to define us. And perhaps the most important lesson is this: you do not have to spend your life proving your worth. You were worthy all along. Again, thank you to James and Donnie for sharing your story. And to our audience, thank you for tuning in. If this story inspired you and interested you, please share it with someone that you feel would love to hear it, needs to hear it for inspiration as well. And look after yourselves. Stay tuned for the next episode, everyone. Take care.
Thanks, Lisa.